changed your life that
You've
much.
Let somebody drill into you. It's Ouch, the show where we aim to share far too much about our lives as disabled people. I'm Kate.
And I'm Rob, and this month's show practically writes itself. We've got an amputee woman who dresses up her stump to look like celebrities, and a blind man who uses a marching band instead of a white cane. Just let us pause to let all of that sink in. Okay, Kate, carry on.
Thank you. We'll be discussing whether you love or hate your wheelchair, white cane or other mobility aids. And two disabled models will be talking about image and looks, amongst other things.
And music from Muckbusted support act Symmetry. Find out the disability link later. Oh, and there's a quiz.
Ouch. Disability Talk from the BBC with Rob Crossan and Kate Monaghan.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another Ouch Talk Show. Let's say an immediate hello to our guests. On the line from New York City is Gillian Mercado. Hello, Gillian.
Hello.
May I go with Gilly, or would you prefer a Gillian?
You can call me whatever.
Okay, then, Andrea. So you're a fashion blogger and the face of an ad campaign for Diesel last year. Yes. Now, you're a power chair user, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
So can you briefly tell us what kind of poses does a model strike in a power chair?
I mean, it's whatever you want to pose. There's no like guidebook or anything. It's whatever you feel comfortable, and it's, you know, with you and the photographer.
Yeah.
It's all about being comfortable and like having fun. So, not a lot of thinking.
Well, in our studio, we've got Chelsea J. Hello, Chelsea.
Hello.
Now, you're an ambassador for Models of Diversity, and you've been campaigning to get more disabled models used in the fashion industry. You're looking beautiful today.
Thank you. I'm a little bit windswept.
Very good windswept hair, which I'm enjoying. And as a model, dare I ask what bit of your body you're most proud of?
Ironically, it's my bum, but I'm always sat on it, which is obviously really annoying.
I've actually seen a picture of your bum.
We all did.
We all had a look, you know, in the name of research.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know. So how do you go off showing off your bum then when you're sat in a wheelchair?
Well, what we did, it was just a bit of an experiment, really. We just took the back off. I'm quite lucky I'm not, like, reliant on it for a postural reason. So we popped the back off of it, and there was quite a lot of technical issues with it. We actually had to put, like, a dinner tray underneath so that my bum had a nice
sexy
platform.
Yep.
Yeah, this is just completely taking the sexy out of it, isn't it?
No, not really.
I was on a dinner tray. To be honest, it just happened. We wanted to show sexy in disability. You don't normally get those crossed for some reason, because apparently when, you know, you're disabled, that the part of you that's remotely sexual gets stripped, or is stripped if you've obviously been disabled forever. So
let's go back into that a little bit later. And in our Salford studio, we've got Jackie Hagen down the line. Hey, Jackie.
Hi, love.
Hello. And now you're touring with your one-woman show, and we'll be talking about that later as well.
Sure.
And now you're the amputee we mentioned in the intro. And, yeah, this is one of the more bizarre questions I've had to ask in the history of this show. What are you doing with your stump?
Oh, I
dress
it up.
For goodness sake, what are you doing?
Well, I'm doing a lot of things with it, but one of them is I dress it up as different celebrities, and then people on the internet guess which celebrity that is.
Okay.
Amazing.
What kind of celebrities are you going more for? Icons? Have we got kind of Stalin or more Susan Boyle? What kind of areas of celebrity are you looking at?
Do you know what? I've just done Susan Boyle, but now you've given away one of them. No, it's a whole, we've just had, it's given away the answer because this was yesterday's, but we've just had the man from the Go Compare advert.
Oh, amazing.
But, you know, it goes from that up to, you know, highfalutin artists. You know, I'm happy. Anyone who's got a distinguishing facial feature.
Yeah. Over here from Vancouver, we have got Carmen Papalia. Is that the right way to say your surname there?
Papalia.
Mm-hmm. We want to start with you today. So before we get talking about your project at the V&A in London, I'm quite interested in your cane. Now, you had a white cane, is that right? Can I look at what you've done to it?
Yes. I still call this my white cane, by the way, although it's...
It's not very white,
no.
Is it?
No. It's a graphite cane.
Now, can I just say, you are blind. You're not just carrying a cane around with you for no reason.
I don't identify as blind necessarily. I've changed identifiers throughout my life, so I've...
Okay, so what would you call yourself?
It really depends on the situation. I mean, sometimes I will say, you know, depending on who I'm around and who's present, like, that I'm a blind person, a visually impaired person. But I really have been lately I've been connecting my own embodiment to my learning style. So I've been thinking of myself as learning through my non-visual senses. That's not a quick to say word.
So do you really dislike that white cane then? Because we've just had a look at it, and that noise you might have heard just then was Rob playing around with it.
I couldn't help myself.
No. So what did you do to your white cane?
I essentially just peeled off all of the white and red tape, and it was a graphite cane. So now it's a beautiful, like, black kind of
classic,
slick color.
It's almost like a matte kind of finish to it. It's a suave stick. Uh-huh. It's absolutely the suavest stick I've seen.
I replaced the handle with a wooden handle as well. So it's kind of like I just pieced together the kind of implement that I wanted to use instead of just using this institutional symbol.
Isn't that like a little bit dangerous? Because obviously people out there know, you know, when you see somebody with a white cane coming, you know that that's a sign that somebody has a visual impairment. So when they come, you know, when you're wielding your black stick, do people get the same message that you have an impairment?
Do. But I don't necessarily want to deliver that message all the time. I think that the symbol, it's confusing for folks as well. I think that the action of swiping the cane from, you know, one side to the next and is more indicative of that, of the person's embodiment than the symbol. It's a clear indication of what they're doing.
Does it affect your ego? Do you feel that people are just looking at the stick back and forth and not looking at you? Is that what it boils down to?
It has something to do with, like, it's attracting a lot of folks that want to offer support, but they don't necessarily know how to. So it's more of a bother than anything else to have people always walking up to me and asking if I need help. So I just rather just ask someone for help if I need it.
Gillian, do you dislike your chair as a sort of sign of your disability?
I mean, yeah, it's the first, I think for me especially, it's the first thing people see sometimes. Unless I'm wearing some crazy outfits. It's the first thing people see. And I totally understand what he was talking about with, you know, not having people ask you for help. And you're like, no, I don't need help. I'll ask you if I need help.
Yeah. Chelsea, do you pimp up your chair? Do you think, you know, you should be able to pimp it and make it look awesome?
100%. I so resonate with what Carmen was saying, because it's like you're having something that if you use a stick or a wheelchair or any sort of mobility aid, you want it to, I know it sounds really funny, but you almost want it to be a reflection of you without taking you away. And, you know, with, like, they're so obvious with mobility aids, you know, there's no way of hiding them. And my mobility scooter, I spray painted black, I took the basket off, I put a bike basket with all flowers all over it. I made it me. I'd never buy a chair that was, you really get mobility equipment that's red and really bright, and I just personally, for me, it's literally like, I'm disabled, that's all I feel like it says. You know, why wouldn't you have a classic, you know, use classic colors? And, you know, I want my chair to go with my clothes. You know, I'll go for black or white because I know that it will go with what I'm wearing, you know, things like that. I don't think people that aren't disabled wouldn't think that you'd be as precarious as that, but you are, because it's part of you, isn't it? It's not you, it's part of you. And I think that's really important. And
Jackie, how do you feel about your prosthetic? Do you feel a similar way?
Well, my prosthetic looks more like me than my other leg does. It's you know, pimped to the extreme. It lights up. It's got wings on it. It's holographic.
It's got wings on it.
What?
It's got sequin. You know, it's really, really, yes, yeah. It's diamante. It's sort of everything. And really, I just picked up everything off, you know, the bedroom floor and glued it to it. But it looks, you know, it looks amazing.
Gillian, do you have a pimped chair? Do you agree with what Chelsea was saying?
No, yeah, I feel like in, you know, who makes these chairs don't realize that. Like for me. And I agree with Chelsea too. I like my classic black, like all black chair.
All black everything.
Exactly. I mean, if you know, if you're the kind of person who wants to have a splash of color, sure, that should be a choice. But I'm more of a keeping it simple.
And I do find people tend to make dreadful fashion mistakes with their wheelchairs. I've seen quite a few fully grown adults with wheelchairs, but they've put Mr. Men stickers on them and things like that. Like, I just wonder, why would you do that? Why do people do that
to
their wheelchairs?
People should be allowed to put a Mr. Man sticker on it if it makes them happy.
It is all about your own preference, isn't it? It's like at the end of the day, you know, it's like a phone cover. You know, you go out and buy a phone cover. Some people have cats all over theirs. Me.
That's so funny.
Some people have their football team. You know, it's all about your own personal preference. I mean, like with Carmen, with his stick, that if you look at Carmen and then you look at his stick, they go together. They are literally, they just fit so well together with what he's wearing, everything. Then, you know, if he had one that was, you know, stripey, and I'd go, that's not that guy's stick. It doesn't go. Do you know what I mean? It's all about
it
making it you and your own.
Yeah, but you
take.
Don't want people going, ah, do you?
No,
and
you
that's
don't.
What a Mr. Man sticker does. It's like when I'm in a wheelchair, there's clothes that I wouldn't wear than when I've got the prosthetic on, because it's as soon as you're in a wheelchair, people see you as slightly more vulnerable.
Yeah, absolutely.
And clothes mean
clothes,
different things.
What clothes would you not wear? That's
I've got a Care Bear backpack that you know. An actual Care Bear.
Now this is exactly what I'm talking about, Jackie.
In a wheelchair, people go like, oh, isn't that? Oh, that's so nice. And then when I'm stood up and I'm looking a little bit, maybe a bit a touch of goth or something, people are like, oh right, she's owning it. And there's differences to, you know, people's perceptions.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I couldn't agree more.
So Carmen, talking about your superb symbiosis between your stick and your attire,
sartorial elegance
personified. And failure, most Canadians I meet do not dress as well as you, my friend. Let's be quite frank about
I'm
this.
I'm not from the mountains.
That is apparent.
Just
indeed.
To be clear, Carmen is wearing a very cool waistcoat, cardigan, tie with a very awesome hat that makes me think I need to wear hats more.
Are you even encouraging me to start wearing hats?
I think having seen Carmen's awesome hat, I think this should be a new trend.
Yeah, no, hats all round for the Out Show next month. Now, if you want to see Carmen's, his clothes, his awesome clothes, as well as his more relevant artistic work, he's going to be a resident at the Victoria and Albert Museum in London. Is that this month? When does that begin?
Well, I've been working there for the last, well, over a month now, and the residency ends at the end of March. But okay. I will be having a performance on March 20th.
So tell me a little bit about what we can expect.
Well, I am going to... Well,
How
I,
much
I
mean, can you give away right now?
Oh, no, I can give it away. I'm essentially going to be wandering the galleries without a white cane, and I'm going to be replace my cane with a Foley sound artist that actually works at the BBC. So,
and when you say a Foley, this is like the old radiophonic workshop with sounds
that's
of
right.
melons being smashed and eggs being cracked.
Yes.
How would that even help anyway?
She's going to anticipate my collisions with precious objects in the museum, and then she's going to make sounds that illustrate impact.
priceless artworks being knocked to the floor.
Yes. So we're going to just develop a system for my mobility throughout the museum, and I'm just going to freely explore as she kind of illustrates my movement.
And I hate to bring the boring stamp of legitimacy onto this, but what about insurance? What happens if you do break something valuable?
That's what we're all going to see, isn't it? We all want to see that.
This is what we're hoping.
Yeah. It's like, that's why people watch the EastEnders live, wasn't it? Just to see people mess up.
I guess the museum has like such trust in me because they haven't brought that up yet. So,
they must trust you.
Yeah.
I wouldn't. No.
You're going in the morning, everything's bubble wrapped.
I'm pretty sure you told our producer Damon, though, earlier in the week that you actually wanted to break something.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, like, I had thought, like, when I was starting to work as an artist, I was thinking, well, I'm already coming up against this, like, this huge challenge of practicing as an artist and making a career of my work, which is very rare. And you know, besides the point, I'm a disabled person, and there's, you know, I was thinking, how do I get into the historical record? How do I get into art history? And so I was like, well, I happen to know that in museums they keep catalogs of everything that happens to a particular object, from whether it was sent to another museum on loan or it was damaged and repaired. It's all kind of cataloged in this log. And I had thought, well, the easiest way for me to get into the historical record would be for me to like damage an object.
Alphabetically. Let's just work our way through this. Now, this isn't the first time you've done a project like this. I think we've got a sound clip, which we'll play in a moment, of you in... Oh, here it is
there
now.
There it is.
Here it is now. Now, this is you... I should probably let you explain this yourself, but briefly, this is you with a marching band instead of a stick on the streets of Vancouver.
Oh, no, this is actually Santa Ana, California.
Oh, this is in California.
Yeah,
right, okay.
So I was doing a residency at the Grand Central Art Center, and I ended up developing this project with the Great Centurion Marching Band from Century High School. We, you know, just, they were interested in getting involved in this performance, and essentially, yeah, the concept is that I would replace my cane with a marching band and just freely explore the town. And I didn't have prior knowledge of the layout of the city or anything. I just really was.
And
was
the band
improvised.
Literally followed you. It's almost as if they were stalking you
they
around
did,
the city.
They did, and they were indicating just different obstacles and different parts of the city to me with musical cues. And the marching band director worked between me and the band, so I had agency, and he was really just kind of anticipating where I might go and what I might do. And I ended up finding my way into buildings and restaurants and all sorts of
and the
things.
Band would follow you into restaurants, into men's rooms.
I think this should be like a regular thing, like when you do your big shop, like you're going through like a supermarket.
Is that why have a white stick when you can have your own personal marching band? I mean, and did you find the band actually more effective than a stick?
You know,
does it work
it
better?
Was it, yes, you know, we had very
government funding's gonna be all over the place.
I'm gonna. Yeah, there's a precedent for it now. So
it works, Cameron. It works.
No. Okay. So when I was going down a step on a curb, maybe to cross a street, for example, there would be like this, dun, dun, and then when I was walking up, it would go dun, dun, and so like there was these scales that would play, and so when I was walking up a flight of stairs, you could imagine that it was like dun, 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 dun. The soundtrack would even slow down and quicken up based on how fast I was walking. And
what about left and right?
I was just wandering left and right. They were really following me for the most part. So yeah, left and right. I mean, it's something that maybe that's why I've removed the weight from my cane, because I just want to be able to freely explore.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, I don't want to have to, be restricted by, you know, having folks guide me over all the time.
Now, you are something of lightning in a bottle in terms of good ideas. And I want to tell you about another one in the Guggenheim. Tell us a little bit about your idea where you took sighted people on a touch tour, which obviously is something that usually only blind people go on.
Yes, definitely. So that project was called The Touchy Subject, and it was really to figure in the tactile sense as a way of knowing and a way of learning in the museum, and really considering if touch could be part of the viewer experience. So really I worked with museum staff and had them lead one-on-one touch tours with the visitor. And I got access to objects from the collection that are often just available for visually impaired people to touch, and yes, opened up that access for everybody. So these tours were led by museum staff, and they would have a visitor hold their elbow and close their eyes, and they would lead them through the museum and direct their hand to tactile points of interest.
Mm. When you say tactile, because I imagine most artworks in the Guggenheim, you're kind of not allowed to touch them.
No. The objects that we pulled from the collection were, they did have tactile qualities. And I mean, the building itself is also a tactile object. It's
the curving staircase.
Frank Lloyd Wright building. Mm. It's just, I mean, everything is curvaceous.
And they had to keep their eyes closed to get that real sense of what it was like.
Yeah, it provides some focus, and it really is a way of focusing in on the tactile sense. And really it changed everybody's perception of the museum and the space, and really helps them connect to, you know, where their body and body is in space. And I think that folks often tend to be like visually like overstimulated in museums, and I think that it was really grounding the experience in some ways. Folks were, I mean, really got lost in the experience and got really excited about it, and really just wanted to keep going. It was really supposed to be like a 15-minute tour, and folks kept
got out of hand. Gillian, exactly. Is this something that appeals to you? I mean, do you feel that you're, as a wheelchair user, you're over-reliant on your eyes? I mean, does a touch tour of the Guggenheim appeal to you?
No, I think that is the most genius name, one. I love that name. I was like geeking out here, like trying to search it on my phone.
We love touchy subjects.
I mean, I use all my senses. I feel like when you don't really get to feel the floor, I feel it through my chair. So everything enhances, you know, my eyesight enhances. I feel like I have great eyesight and, you know, just like sense of the world and everything. Because, you know, with the chair, when there's like a little bumps, I always tell people like, wow, this floor feels amazing. And they're like, what? So like I can tell like when a road is like awfully made or like really like super richly made. So yeah, all the senses are working at the same time always.
You're listening to Ouch! Disability Talk from the BBC with me, Kate, and him, Rob. Round the table, we have fashion blogger Gillian Mercado, ambassador for Models of Diversity, Chelsea J, artist Carmen Papalia, and star of her own show, currently on tour, Jackie Hagen. Chelsea, Jackie, are we too reliant on our eyes, do you think?
Well, I've got something wrong with my eyes that's called, honest to God, it's called syndrome, genuinely. It's got a H instead of a K.
How do you spell that?
Yeah, please tell me how that's
spelled. F-U-C-H. So I can't see. It means that, like, when there's glare from lights, you can't see nothing. So I'm like a cross between, like, a pensioner and a mogwai. So I'd love that tour. That'd be great.
I love your description.
Chelsea, what do you think?
I think that the tour sounded absolutely amazing. What I really liked was the fact that these people that obviously see, they were taking in so much of what they wouldn't be seeing because they were restricted. So, for example, when you were describing the actual building itself, like when you go to a museum, you generally won't, you'll say, oh, you know, lovely place, blah, blah, blah. But you wouldn't actually go to the extent of feeling like the wall and what the texture is. I think it's absolutely beautiful in its simplicity, actually, gorgeous. I can really appreciate what Julie was saying about, obviously, like a path, like a smooth path. I literally, like, I zoomed down that bad boy, like literally arms in the air, smiling, singing, because you so appreciate it when you, you know, you're not bumbling over like gravel. Or I've really noticed, because I haven't always been disabled, so I've obviously really seen a difference, like in how most paths slope. Like I always feel like I'm on a tilt, but if you're walking, you wouldn't necessarily feel that as much. Mm. Yeah, I think that your senses are on fire, to be honest, when you've got a disability. You're ultra aware of everything.
And Carmen is going to be in residency at the V&A in London until which date?
March 31st.
Yeah. And there'll be links for that on our blog as well.
Coming up. When you are around me, you know I can't speak, 'cause you know I'm trying to. That's Symmetry. They sound awesome. They're touring with McBusted in March, and you won't be surprised to hear that one of them has a disability connection, which is why we're playing them. And you'll find out what that is when we play the track in full at the end of the show.
I was going to say, I thought we just plugged in your personal iPod into the mixing desk. Anyway.
I'll be hearing them when I go and see McBusted on the tour. Anyway, let's turn now to Jackie Hagen. Now, Jackie, you're about to start touring with your show Some People Have Too Many Legs. But until last summer, it was going to be about something completely different. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Oh, well, when I got the commission, it was going to be about how to be a proper person, because I never felt like a proper, well, proper adult, I guess. And I was going to get, each date on the tour, I was going to get the audience to make a suggestion of what I should do to feel like a proper adult, like, you know, learn to drive, whatever. And, you know, I'd see how the, you know, I'd give people feedback on it. But then all of a sudden, like about a minute after I got the commission, I suddenly got really sick, or like went into hospital, went through this big life changing, you know, experience, facing death, having bits cut off, having maggots put on my stump, dude. And then,
wow.
I know. And then
maggots,
honest to God. And they were coming from Wales.
Welsh maggots. Why? This is like putting leeches on you, isn't it?
The first date on the tour is in Wales, by the way, so don't slag off Wales.
So it was quite recent
then
that you lost
like
your leg.
I felt like a proper grown up then. Sorry, go on, love.
Sorry, so it's quite recently that you've lost your leg.
Yeah, sure. But it was like 18 months ago, something like that.
Why did they put maggots on your leg?
To eat up the bacteria.
Delightful.
I was training to be a nurse before I became disabled, and we would, if someone had like a really bad bed sore, they used to get what looked like a tea bag, and it had maggots inside it, and then we'd put it inside of the bed sore and cover it, and they'd eat all the skin. They did their little shift, and then off they went.
A shift? Yeah. Did you pay them overtime?
Yeah, that's it. They were like on the clock.
Amazing. Now, I want to
read...
I feel
like we're in a Charles Dickens novel set in a workhouse.
You've got to go old school for some stuff. It works miracles, and it just leaves the aerial clean, and it sounds horrible, but it's actually really good.
Next month on Ouch, we'll be telling you that the Earth is actually flat.
Anyway, I want to go back to your show.
It didn't work that well on me, to be fair. I mean, like, cut off.
lazy maggots.
Yeah, they weren't that great.
Slackers.
They must not have been Welsh. Yeah. I've got a maggot-related tattoo now. I do some puppetry of the Welsh maggots in the show, so I've got little happy faces tattoos on my pointy fingers, and they're the maggots. Yeah.
Let's look at the blurb for your show. Last summer, I got that big ball of perspective. It was funny and terrifying, and I came away with one less leg and loads more understanding. I realised stuff like the fight for sexual equality isn't between men and women, it's between people and idiots. That if you're working class, you inherit anger, and if you're middle class, you inherit manners. And a house. And that the minimum fill line on a kettle is real. So can you tell me a bit more about what that actually means for your show?
Everyone keeps having a go at me about the middle class line now because they keep going, well, I haven't got a house.
I'd like a house.
Yeah, I haven't had one either, mate. So, you know, we're both the worries, aren't we?
Kate does have a house, by the way.
I have not inherited a house. Let's just make that clear.
Okay, I'm not saying there's good and bad between them things. Right, what's the show about? Is that what you're asking, really?
That's the basis of my question, yep.
Yeah. What that blurb means is that I learnt loads of stuff. There was in the next bed to me for like 5 months was this old woman called Edna, who was 72 and looked like a threadbare tennis ball with eyes. And she hated absolutely everything. She really hated the world. She hated me. She hated nurses. She hated compassion. And I loved her.
How can you hate compassion?
I absolutely adored her.
And she hated you.
And nice. She hated me, and I kept pestering her. And she, just listening to her go on for 5 months, because she didn't shut up. And I just learnt, like, soaked in like 72 years worth of experience into my head, and sort of realised loads of stuff about, because I was really angry about class and gender and stuff, and I sort of slowly calmed down, you know, through understanding of like the other side, what have you. So that's what that blurb is about. But the show is more about, you know, well, it's about Edna quite a lot, but the show is about going from like feeling dead, embarrassed and like horrible about something about yourself, and you know, something like where it makes your body cringe and it's all rubbish. Going from that to owning it, and you know, putting glitter on it and loving and genuinely loving it, you know?
So how did you lose your leg?
Oh, even the doctors don't know. All of a sudden there was like this is a bit boring, so I'll make it quick. There was like a sort of a spasm in my main artery in my foot, and it caused a big like pile, bum 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 bum, of blood clots. And then they were like, "Oh right, this could happen anywhere because you don't know why it's happening." So that's why I was like facing death. It was like, "Oh my god!" And these, you know, it still could happen. And then it didn't heal, so they had to keep cutting more off, you know, each time it didn't heal because the maggots kept letting me down. And then eventually it did heal, and that's the stump that is the celebrity stumps. So it healed really weird, and it's got like a sort of, it looks like a mouth on it. You know the blonde one out of Birds of a Feather with the
Linda
people
Robson.
In? Yeah. It looks like a miserable gob on it. So I thought at first I was like dead ashamed of it. I was gutted that it wasn't going to be like a beautiful stump. So then, you know, if
you're hoping for Marilyn Monroe lips and you got Linda Robson.
Oh my
Robson.
God, that's another one of the celebrity stumps we did the other day.
I keep giving the game away here. I do apologise. Yeah.
I mean, you're quite a new disabled on the show.
Yeah, totally.
You know, we often have people who've lived with their disability for a long time. What's it been like we always say coming to terms with your disability, don't we? But what's it been like for you sort of accepting it and making it part of who you are?
It's been great. I was like really messed up before, and then, you know, I couldn't cope with nothing, and I was a pain in the bum, trying not to swear there. And then going through all that just made me grow up dead fast and become a better person. And it also, there was this lad that I just met and was really trying to impress him. So all the way through, I was, you know, trying to be dead good at having one leg. So it's for me personally, it's really sorted me out loads. I mean, I'm in pain all the time, but I'm dead good at pain. So that's like really gives me loads of confidence because other people aren't. They're rubbish. So so for me, it's been a good thing, you know. I mean, I've consciously decided it was going to be a good thing, you know, because I thought this could break me. I'm already half broken. But yeah, for me, it's been good. Maybe there's a, you know, a nervous breakdown in the post, but I don't think there is. I think I'm all right.
Well, tell me about your trips to the hospital.
What, oh God, which ones? There's under...
Well, specifically to the prosthetist.
Oh, well, Legs and Co, we call it. Oh God, yeah, when you go in there. Like, I'd love that place to be... Well, I'd like it to have like a sort of dance floor and stuff because you're there for like 8 hours without your leg on, you know. So, you know, figure out how to dance with that one leg. But no, it's like a really horrible brown. Oh, I feel like I'm slagging them off badly, but it is like a dead, oh, like grayscale sort of build, and all the people are like outside smoking the fingers to the bone and like going greyer by the minute. And it's just it zaps your soul out of you.
How,
you know?
How are you different then?
Well, I'd make an effort to be different. I overdress. I go in a blooming, like a ball gown and trainees. And it's like I want to put a force field around me so it doesn't get in, you know? And it's even like the people talking there. I mean, God love them. You know, I don't, you know, whatever way you deal, don't you? But going on for 8 hours about like, oh, what medication are you on? How much pain are you in? Mm. It just doesn't seem to do you any good. I mean, I'm not doing them good because I'm being so happy and I'm annoying them. But, you know. Mm.
And these group things often do become just an ill-off, don't they?
Oh, yeah, like a competition.
Yeah,
almost
like one-upmanship in
sickness. I mean, I understand why. Because I was like that before about like mental health, and I'd go on and on about tablets and that, but now it's just like, this isn't going to work. And if I'm going to die any minute, I just can't be bothered listening to boring conversation, you know?
So you've got mental health problems as well?
Well, I don't know. Like, I did have before, but I think it was just growing up.
I think she's the sanest guest we've ever had on the show, quite frankly.
Thank you.
But did you have a diagnosis of a mental health problem?
Yeah, bipolar. Well, I was in and out of psychiatric wards in my 20s. I was bonkers in my 20s. But I think it was just like, my mum and dad were, like, brilliant, but, like, they sort of... I'm from Skem, aren't I, which is, like, not, you know, not Liverpool. It's, like... poor version of Liverpool, and I think my parents, like, they had kids too young, too poor and too scam, and so I didn't learn how to sort of the usual way of coping, so I'd cope with disco and all this, so I was having like a wild time, and then I'd get really depressed, and so they thought it was bipolar. I don't really know if it is, because I've spoke to people who like have properly got bipolar, and I don't really feel the same, you know, so I think I was just coping weirdly.
And I'm really interested in your relationship, because you had just started seeing a guy and then got ill.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, that's like make or break. How did that happen?
Oh, my God. And he was totally out of my league as well. And I was, you know, when you're pretending to be better than you are and then you've got maggots on your stump. Oh, my God. But it helped because I was trying to impress him.
Maggots on the stump, sexy?
Well, the thing, poor lad, the things he's got eroticised, like my stump for the celebrity stumps, have started growing a moustache on it, like a shave my stump, but leave that. The things he's got to cope with, you know, because that doesn't go away when we're having it off, does it? It's still attached to me. So obviously he's a very, very good person because he's just like incredibly ethical. So he was like, oh, I mean, we had a few dates. We got really close, you know, when you really click with someone, you think, I want to spend all my time with you. I want to, you know, to get close to you. I want to murder you and climb inside your skin.
It's also probably the closest he's ever going to get to having it away with Marilyn Monroe or Susan Boyle.
Well, you never know, do you? I mean, I might have connections.
Who are attached to you in a way.
You might get Susan Boyle, maybe not Marilyn Monroe, yeah. but yeah, but he's just great. He sort of, you know, he empties me. Hang on, he empties me wee bottle and stuff like that, but manages to eroticise a stump.
Chelsea, what do you find relationships are easier or harder with disability?
Well, to be honest with you, I it really is just odd to me because, like, I met my boyfriend 3 months into becoming disabled, and I literally, a mate of mine was a bouncer. I hadn't been out for ages because I'd just been so ill, and I just wanted to hear music and be around people. And she can obviously become so isolated, especially when you're disabled and then you're ill as well. You're just groggy all the time. And I was just sat on a bar stool in this absolute dead-end bar, and my boyfriend walked in, obviously not my boyfriend at the time, this guy walked in, and we both were just talking and just hit it off, and then I was carried out the bar. I hadn't been drinking, I was carried out, sat in my chair, and that whole time he didn't realise I was disabled, and then I thought that would be just sort of a deal-breaker, but it wasn't. Obviously, we're still together 3 years on, but it's... I don't really like when people like congratulate me on having a boyfriend, or he's a good one, he's a good egg. Sweetheart, he's got a catch, like, yeah, you know, like,
look right here, please.
Yeah, that's it. It's like, you know,
this idea that he must be some kind of humanitarian saint.
I know, he's a hero. Like, he kind of like just like bench presses me just through the air, and you know, it's not like that.
And but Carmen, does he do that?
No, I'm too heavy. I'm not joking.
And Carmen, you're about to get married, aren't you?
Yeah, at the end of August.
Oh, well, yeah. Congratulations. Do you find that people think your wife is a hero for marrying you, or your future wife, I should say?
I don't think so. I don't know. We actually had a conversation about this last night, like just kind of talking about that dynamic that happens sometimes, and yeah. I don't think I've witnessed that, but.
It's that mix, isn't it, between like partner and carer, and it can kind of overlap. I mean, naturally,
it's complicated.
It is.
Gillian, how about you?
I'm currently single, but I do get that sometimes. It's funny, my friend told me the other day that I'm a very intimidating person, and I was like, ooh, okay. there's sometimes when I've dated before, they're like, oh wow, he's a great guy. So it's funny when people just like automatically think that the person is like have won like the Nobel Prize for going out with someone who has a disability.
For sure.
Which I find they're pretty hilarious.
Yeah. So Jackie, can you plug your show for us?
Oh yeah, sure. It's called Some People Have Too Many Legs, and it starts touring on Friday in Cardiff, and then it's going all around the UK, and it's coming to Manchester on the 9th of May at Contact Theatre. And you can find all the dates, if you just follow me on Twitter, then you get, you know, tour dates and celebrity stumps and maggots, Jackie Hagen, or you can find me on Facebook, or I've got a website, which is jackiehagen.weebly.com, because I didn't want to pay the money to have jackiehagen.com. I thought I'd spend that on sweets and stuff to glue to my leg. Yeah, do you want me to say something? I've already said stuff about it, but it's not dead depressing or boring, because I hate them things. It's like, I mean, there's some earnest, there's sad stuff in it, obviously, but there is also, you know, you can tell, can't you, what it's going to be like from our gab. It's like that.
we could chat all day, and I would genuinely quite like to, but we do have to move on. But thank you so much, Jackie. Now, Chelsea and Gillian, we've got you both in because there was a show by a group called FTL Moda at New York Fashion Week, which included disabled models. And it made something of a splash, but I know, Chelsea, you're upset that, you know, around the same time London Fashion Week had no disabled models at all. So what would the audience in New York have seen?
Well, basically, the show in New York, it had two models of diversity models, Alicia and Jack. They, from my perspective, and I've always found it throughout my campaigning over the last few years, is that America embraces disability more. She's like, no, because like, for example, Jillie gets jobs, like with she did the jeans thing, Nordstrom, which is like a brand that used disabled models. They just incorporate models into the brand. It's not let's do a disability show, let's do this. It's actually just they're disabled, they're here, cool, let's just do this.
So Gillian, you clearly don't agree with Chelsea at all here. Can you tell me why?
It's really funny. It's really, really funny. I actually feel like it's the other way around.
Gillian, don't make me upset, love. I follow you. It's going to break me up.
So why would it be better to be in Britain than in the States then?
I don't know. I feel like when I did the Diesel campaign, I got just like an uproar of people from the UK saying how, like, asking me questions like, oh, why are you surprised? And I'm like, well, you don't see this at all here, at all, which is funny. I mean, the jobs that I get or whatever, it's because I've, like, harassed people. Like, you have to use me.
But that's the case for all of modelling, not just
disability
modelling, surely.
No, exactly. I just, like, don't sleep at night trying to, you know, hustle my way through anything I can do. So I'm pretty sociable, so I pretty get along with everybody. And so, you know, if I meet a photographer, I'm like, let's do something. And and then we do something.
Just get yourself out there.
Yeah. Like I said, I really don't sleep at night, so.
Well, I've got a statement here. I'm just going to read a little bit of it out to you. There's all at the British Fashion Council, which obviously claims to promote diversity in the industry. Yeah. You can see we're trying to be neutral here, aren't we? Thanks, Chelsea. But it tells us that it's down to individual fashion houses to cast their own models at London Fashion Week. Now, in a statement, the CEO, Caroline Rush, now she told us here at Ouch that they do encourage designers to represent and celebrate the diversity of the capital in their shows, and they welcome this debate. Now, Rush also said in 2010, UK retailer Debenhams was the first to launch a high street campaign featuring disabled model Shannon Murphy. We think she must have meant Shannon Murray. A bit of a clanger there from Caroline. Gillian, I mean, all the models at New York Fashion Week, though, were in their own separate show, like a statement was being made. Shouldn't it all be integrated together?
No, it has to be. Yeah, but it's not.
But it's not, though, is it?
Yeah, no. I mean, it's funny because I just heard about the New York Fashion Week that used two disabled models. That's why it's really funny to me that Chelsea thinks the other way around, because I was actually, I don't want to say mad, but I was a little disappointed because it was a company that I've never heard of, really. And I've been in the industry for like 6 years. I will not rest until there's more diversity in high fashion shows, for example, like, you know, Betsy Johnson. I mean, not that that's high fashion, but anyways, like Betsy Johnson or like, you know, Dolce & Gabbana show or an Alice and Olivia show, something that will actually like go viral and make the message a little bit more like we're here and we're not going anywhere. I didn't even get invited to that show, and I was in Lincoln Center. So,
and you've worked with them. Weren't you in the same studio when you were doing your Diesel campaign as RJ Mitty was when he was doing Gap?
Yes, I was, which is, it's a funny story because I was one freaking out that I was in that studio. But when I saw him, I fangirled because I loved Breaking Bad so much.
And RJ is Walter White Jr. in Breaking Bad.
Yes. So I saw him and we were both waiting for our cabs at the same time. And I was like, I didn't tell him I knew the show, but I was like, oh, hey. And he's like, oh, were you here for Diesel? I'm like, yeah, what were you here for? He's like, oh, I'm here for Gap. And I was like, awesome.
That's pretty cool. I mean, RJ is a total dude. We've just been making a film with him, which you will see on the Ouch site in the next couple of weeks.
Get you.
Oh, I know. I like to plug.
Welcome to big school.
But we don't have that in the UK. We don't have disabled models going for Gap or Diesel or anything, do we, Chelsea?
No, the only thing that has ever happened over here has always been the real tokenistic, like one disabled person every few years, and then, or the worst cases I just cannot stand are when I go to brands and say, can you just have a meeting with us to talk about disabled models? I act as a friend. I don't, I don't go in there, you know, all guns blaze. I say, let's just get together. Let's just have a chat. Let's talk about your concerns. And they'll say that they used a 9-year-old with Down syndrome like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And I'm like, can you literally hear yourself? Can you hear yourself? Because you've just said
Chelsea,
that a child represents a whole disabled buying age, you know, fashion lovers. That's supposed to be okay.
But why should these brands and these high street stores and all of these people in charge, why should they use disabled models?
Because we're giving them our money, babes. As simple as that. We're buying their stuff. You know, at the end of the day, it's like, I don't know if it's as big over in America, Gilly, but in England, the UK, we absolutely love our online shopping. And we've got a lot of online brands that are just online, and we get our clothes, especially disabled people, because you haven't got to worry about going in a shop and worrying about a change room and dragging rails down like what I do all the time. So we use online brands. I've gone to all of the main online brands. I've had meetings with some of them, and they've just said to me, they just don't want to do it. They just don't want to be the first. They don't want to commit to anything. And it's like, what is going on here?
Somebody is eventually going to break that mould, aren't they? Surely.
Someone has to, or I'm going to get very, very annoyed. You know, they have to. It's, you shouldn't have. I get so passionate and angry because I shouldn't be asking for this. This is a basic human right to be represented. It's as simple as that. And the fact that people are just so blasé. It's not something we want to do.
No, what? I loved what Jackie said earlier about when she went to her prostheticist. I'm shocking with that. Yeah. And she says she wore a ball gown, you know, because she almost wants to be shielded again. So I want to throw this over to both of you, Chelsea and Gillian. Do you find that dressing up as glamorously as possible does kind of help you in some way in terms of living your life with a disability in a more awesome way?
Who wants to go first?
Go on, Gillian.
I mean, I feel like at first I used to dress more than I was comfortable with just to make a statement. And now I just dress up. And even when I just dress, people are like, oh, where are you going? And I'm like, just getting some milk at the grocery store.
What kind of stuff do you like to wear then? What kind of stuff do you go out
in? I mean, honestly, I'm air quoting right now, normal people clothes. It's just like I shop at Urban Outfitters and I shop at H&M and I shop at Forever 21. And, you know, I shop at, you know, again, air quotes, regular people clothes. And yet I'm stopped asking me where I'm going. And I'm like, I'm not going anywhere.
You're tuned to Ouch, the BBC's disability talk show, whatever that means, with Kate Monaghan and Rob Crossan. If you want to get in touch, then email ouch@bbc.co.uk or find @BBCOuch on Twitter. Chelsea, what kind of stuff do you like to wear?
To be honest with you, I'm a really mixed bag with fashion. Sometimes I'll dress like a little 8-year-old boy in like Converse and some jeans, and other times I will like literally have like pencil skirt, be a little bit more sophisticated, a little bit more girly and feminine. I think that I've found with fashion and how I dress with my disability, people are going to stare at you, so you might as well just give them something to stare at. You know, you're almost constantly under like the big brother eyes sort of thing. So I kind of I almost feel like more pressure since I've like become disabled that I always need to look nice, because it's people expect disabled people to be frumpy and to be wearing like sweatpants all the time, and you know, to not be happy and you know, proud of their appearance and work on it. So I think that it definitely sets you up to want to, you're a little bit more like, I need to look fit.
Do you ever see other people in wheelchairs and see that they're dressed, you know, not so well, and do you think you're letting the team down? Do you feel that way?
Yeah, I think like
me,
you know,
sweatpants.
I think like obviously with some disabilities you really do want to be comfortable, especially if you're in a wheelchair. Obviously, you know, it's not ideal to wear harsh, you know, just for like a logistics thing, it's not really nice to wear tights or jeans for long periods of time. But I think that it makes me sad more than anything else if people don't that are disabled don't really work on their appearance, because I think that they almost feel that they're not worthy to, and that, you know, they're almost consumed by their disability, giving them that, you know, that platform of you're just going to have to just blur. No, don't. You stand out. You show these brands that you're wearing them, tweet them, tell them that you're wearing them and that you don't feel represented. Show, you know, let them see it. It's really important.
Lovely. Well, thank you very much for that. It's time now for the quiz, where we find out how much you've absorbed from the disability news in the last month. And I've been told that we've been talking far too much, so we are almost out of time and we are going to rattle our way through it. It seems that unpleasant language is at the top of the agenda. So our first question, why did TV football pundit and former Irish international Kevin Kilbane make a complaint to the Football Association last month? I feel like our American and Canadian guests are going to be at a bit of a disadvantage with this one.
Is Jackie still there?
Oh, yeah. What do we answer this?
Have a go. Do you know what the answer is?
Someone came in talking about my leg. What was it? Oh, it's about football. I don't know.
Okay. Let's
anyone?
Let's just tell them, shall we?
Okay. Well, yeah. In a London derby against Tottenham Hotspur, Kilbane says he heard a large number of West Ham fans shouting the following phrase at Spurs' new young forward. Now, this does contain a word that I do not want to use, but I shall, because we're all adults, so just be aware. Harry Kane talks like a mong and plays like one too. Kilbane has a daughter with Down syndrome, the condition that the word alludes to, and says the FA have promised to investigate the matter he has raised. Not cool, guys, not cool.
Okay, next question. At the Grammys in February, Kanye West, Rihanna and Paul McCartney together at last performed their new collaborative song for 5 seconds. Now, West's fans reportedly had to be told who this new bloke McCartney even was. But also the song has what some say is some rather off-colour disability language in it from Mr. West. Now, what does he say, dare I ask?
Oh, I have no idea.
Chelsea, Carmen?
I don't know, but if it's Kanye, it's going to be something really dumb.
I know.
The answer is he appears to rap, "Now I'm 4 or 5 seconds from Wilding, hold me back, I'm about to spaz."
I really wanted you to rap that in a Kanye West style.
That would be even more offensive than Kanye's
lyrics.
You
think he would be ultra careful since that whole concert thing where he tried to make a guy in a wheelchair stand
up? Oh, God. Oh, Jesus.
I know, right?
So I've got to say, Gillian, just help us clear something up here in London. When this comes up, this word, where spaz, we're usually bombarded by emails saying that it means something different in the US. So in the Massive Apple of New York City, what do you take that word to mean?
I mean, spaz. I mean, it's funny because we use it like, oh, you're being crazy, kind of a word.
Because here it means short for spastic.
Yeah. Oh, really? Huh.
So it doesn't mean that in the States.
No.
Interesting.
No.
Well, right. Okay. Interesting.
So it's not offensive in the US then.
No.
I can see now.
We may have just got the ball rolling to get the bird. Yeah, Carmen? And Carmen, what about in Canada?
I don't think many people use it. I mean, but when people say it, I don't assume they're talking about a particular group.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
Wow, interesting.
Well, yeah, I was not expecting that.
No, me neither. And we are out of time, I'm afraid. Thank you to our guests, Gillian Mercado, Chelsea Jay, Carmen Papalia and Jackie Hagen.
The production team were Emma Tracy, Kathleen Hawkins, and the studio manager was Nasser Pervez. The producer, as always, was Damon Rose.
We've got some clips up on YouTube of the show being recorded, so you can see us all if hearing us just isn't good enough for you. Except, of course, Jackie and Gillian, who sadly are hundreds and thousands of miles away.
Wave to the camera now, by the way, Kate.
So, this
there
is
we
us.
Go. Hello.
It's not recording now.
Useless.
Also, between talk shows, we're experimenting by putting out some short topical podcasts on the BBC Ouch podcast feed and on Audio Boom to keep the seat warm until next month.
Music now, time for Symmetry. They are from Florida and they're due to tour in the UK with Muck Busted in March.
Love a bit of Muck Busted. And here's the bit where we finally find out what the disability link is. The reason why we're playing them, get ready. Their lead guitar player, Jared Hara, is blind. He picked up the instrument, aged 11, after losing his sight suddenly, but before he had ever listened to any actual guitar bands. You can read more of Jared's story on the Ouch blog soon. bbc.co.uk/ouch.
So here's Symmetry's latest single, The Cure. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
I keep letting you get to me.